top Fox News headquarters in New York City. Always seeking solutions, never sowing division. It's Brian Kilmeade.
All right, everybody, welcome to the latest edition of the Brian Kilmeade Show. Brett Baer is standing by. He's getting set to go out to the DNC. A lot more, fresh off a huge interview with Nikki Haley last night. James Dixon will be with us, too. He covers Michigan for the New York Post. That's one of the battleground states that might be flipping. Definitely tightened up. It definitely tightened up since the emergence of Kamala Harris as the number one on the ticket. We'll discuss all that, too. And by the way, don't forget, you can always get the podcast. Go to the app. You can always sign up for it. If you ever leave our family of affiliates, you can get us on the app. Just click on watch or click on the headsets. If you just want to go audio, and you get the app at BrianKilmeadShow.com. So before we get to Brett, let's get to the big three.
Now with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's Big Three.
Number three.
The Biden-Harris administration have basically pursued a policy of appeasement since the day Donald Trump stepped out of office. As soon as Biden came in, he starts this appeasement process, playing both sides of everything. Instead of speaking from a position of strength, we're looking to see what Iran does.
Senator Bill Hagerty, upset about the foreign policy of this administration, who isn't ready for anything and everything. Israel poised to strike back should they come under multi-front attacks as threatened, and we claim to be prepared to help as ceasefire talks are one day away. We wait, watch, and perhaps worry.
Number two.
Cost of groceries has gone up. The cost of gas has gone up. It's one of the highest priorities, actually, for the president and for me.
Fighting inflation is one of our administration's top economic priorities.
It will be my day one priority to fight to bring down prices.
Well, you've already had the job for over 1,000 days. Number one issue, the economy. Friday, we get the first policy statement and speech from Kamala Harris. But can't we see what she believes by seeing what the Biden administration has done? Bidenomics ring a bell? Meanwhile, Donald Trump further defines his plans in Asheville, North Carolina today. What do you want to hear?
Number one.
I want this campaign to win. But the campaign is not going to win talking about crowd sizes. It's not going to win talking about what race Kamala Harris is. It's not going to win talking about whether she's dumb. I think the campaign needs to focus. This is a winnable election.
So win it. Campaign 2024. Nikki Haley offers best game plan yet for a Trump win in November, which means overcoming an opponent who won't say what they stand for or what their positions might be or give an interview. But stop complaining. Just look at her record and just run with what she said in the past. Brett Baer joins us now. He's going to host a special report tonight, handles all our election coverage. And we also know that he's going to be anchoring our DNC coverage next week over in Chicago. Brett, welcome.
Morning.
Nikki Haley was pretty direct yesterday. What's your takeaway?
Yeah, I think she had a message to give. And obviously she now wants Donald Trump to win and says essentially it's an existential threat as far as the future of the country if Kamala Harris wins, in her words, on a number of different fronts. And I think she was sending a warning that the campaign, the Trump campaign, needs to focus.
Here's more from Nikki Haley. Cut two.
I want this campaign to win. But the campaign is not going to win talking about crowd sizes. It's not going to win talking about what race Kamala Harris is. It's not going to win talking about whether she's dumb. It's not. You can't win on those things. The American people are smart. Treat them like they're smart.
Do you think the campaign is missing the mark on those things?
I think the campaign needs to focus. That's the main thing. Look, this is a winnable election, but you need to focus.
So what was your takeaway? I mean, her attitude, it was great. It was aggressive. But you initially bumped in your segment with a soundbite saying the first party that ditches their nominee will win, which means Kamala Harris would win, according to original theory. Your thoughts about that?
Yeah, I mean, listen, she was saying this throughout the end of the campaign. I mean, really said it a lot, that she was running really against Kamala Harris and not Joe Biden. And that was pretty prescient if you think about it. I mean, she just had this instinct and she talked about what was going to happen. She said the Republican Party doesn't seem like it's ready to make that shift. And it needs to be. You know, she also said she has no interest in serving inside the Trump administration, which I found interesting. And it took me a couple of times to ask her if she would go out and campaign for the former president. Essentially, her answer at the end was, he hasn't called, and they have to run the campaign they want to run, but she's open to it. He just hasn't called.
Right. What I thought was interesting, too, she said, even if you're on Fox or you're part of the Trump campaign, stop complaining about not giving interviews. Essentially, go through her past record, which she said in the past, and run on that, especially because she hasn't stated any policy at all, just through surrogates. Brett, we get this thing where yesterday we found out she's not for Medicare for all. We also hear she's no longer against fracking, but we didn't hear that from her.
Yeah. And, you know, she is right. Nikki Haley is right that all this time talking about, you know, other things, you could just be talking about what she's said, Kamala Harris has said publicly. You know, she is right now in this sweet spot. She's trying to run away from some unpopular Biden policies and essentially saying, I'm separate, but then also run away from something she said as a presidential candidate back in 2019. So, you know, it's really amazing limbo that she's in and not really defining where she is until this week.
So to a degree, we're watching Donald Trump be a lot busier this week. We watch him with Elon Musk for over an hour on spaces, and then he's going to be in North Carolina today giving a speech, and he did give an interview to Univision last night, and then on Saturday he's going to be in Pennsylvania. But I'm not sure that the message has really been honed yet, how to attack Harris. Why do you think – do you agree with that?
I do. I'm interested to see this North Carolina economic speech and see if there's a different pitch here, that there's a different focus. I think that's the maybe the pivot point. You know, I think Biden-Harris is trying to, you know, talk economy this week as well. It's tougher for them because it's their, you know, their numbers. And I think this is a different speech maybe from Trump, but we'll see.
So a couple of things. President Biden yesterday said he will now sign a bill eliminating a tax on tips, according to the White House, as the administration was actively telling people how to pay taxes as late as July 23rd on all their tips, as recently as July 22nd, I should say, to be totally accurate. They were encouraging people filing an extension on taxes to use their free direct filing and gave them advice how to handle tip giving as it relates to taxes. Now they've reversed it. Without acknowledging that this came from Trump. How weird is that?
It's weird, to use their term. It's very strange, but it's also getting under the skin of Donald Trump. And it is something that, you know, you look back to the successful shifts that have happened before when Bill Clinton took Newt Gingrich's ideas about, you know, welfare to work, you know, it's triangulation, and nobody is really calling them on it. Nobody's, like, confronting them on it, and, you know, besides us.
Probably not. So we'll see, because the polls have certainly tightened up, and we're going to see a brand-new race. There's our interesting speculation. I was listening to a pollster being interviewed, and they said, right now, the reason why Kamala Harris primarily is successful is she's running as a generic Democrat. She's not running as anything yet. And they say when you poll someone and say generic against, whether it's a Republican against a Democrat or a Democrat against a Republican, with a generic candidate, they traditionally do better because they have no problems. This is what a Democrat stands for, run on it. And that's what she's doing now. Until she gets defined after the convention, she just hopes to be an upbeat person who can read a teleprompter. And that would be enough until she digs in and people see what she represents. Do you agree with that pollster definition?
Yeah, I mean, listen, I think it's, again, amorphous. I had Dan Goldman on, congressman from New York, the other day, and he said, you know, it just give her time. She's trying to figure out who she is as a presidential candidate. And I was taken aback by that. I was surprised that he was kind of admitting that. It's a blank canvas, and she's trying to find the paintbrush. And I don't know. She's run for president before. So why are those things not part of her painting? And, you know, she's obviously been vice president in big policy decisions. Why aren't those things on her painting? He's saying she's a blank canvas. And I guess, you know, that's what Democrats are hoping. And it has worked for all of this launch. But eventually, it's not going to work. So you know, eventually you're going to be defunct.
You used to cover the Pentagon. You know what it's like and how much it costs to move all our assets back into that region. You're extending leaves and extending time in which the aircraft, the men and women of the aircraft carriers now have to stay in the Mediterranean. So we have all these assets in the Mediterranean. We expected some type of reprisal, Iranian attack. It hasn't happened. Meanwhile, tomorrow the talks begin. Where's this region heading? Do you think that Israel has dodged the retaliatory bullet from Iran?
It doesn't seem like it. It seems like it's still like this sword hanging over Israel. And anybody you talk to in the field, Jack Keane and contacts within the U.S. intelligence, believes that Iran is still on the move and doing something. And the hopes for these ceasefire talks are pretty dim. So I do think that there's still active movement, but it has taken a long time, and people will say, you know, maybe they're not doing anything.
Hey, Brett, so what is your schedule at the DNC? When do we see you on the air with special programming?
Yeah, we go out Sunday. We'll have same kind of schedule as the RNC. We'll have a show, special report on Sunday, and then a primetime show. Martha and I will anchor kind of setting up, teeing up the DNC from Chicago. And then every night, special report, and then the 10 o'clock Eastern show where we'll, you know, see speeches. We'll see President Biden speak, and we'll see, you know, other luminaries. It'll be interesting because eventually you have to start defining. And remember, the Democratic Party is pretty split as far as progressive versus moderate. They're just not talking about it right now.
Right. Two squad members bit the dust in the primary. The third one escaped. So we'll see what happens. I also think that a lot of celebrities could boomerang. If you're trying to be the voice of the people, the middle class, the working class, and then you have a star-studded event with Ben Stiller and George Clooney, that might be a mixed message. We'll see what happens because I know you love stars. That's why you go to these things. You love celebrities, right?
It's true. Oh, yeah. It's big for me. No. I think that you know, you look at Hillary Clinton when she was closing out that 2016 campaign and she had Beyonce in Philadelphia and all this stuff. It clearly did not work for them. And we'll see what happens this time. A lot of Democrats were pleading with the Harris campaign just have regular people. Mm-hmm. And I take another idea from the Trump campaign.
Right. Not weird people. That's it's the oddest attack ever. I think calling somebody weird because you're in a country that just prides itself on all people getting along. At least we want to parrot those words. But you're saying, well, you're weird. If you're not like me, I don't accept you. J.D. Vance is weird. Donald Trump is weird. Okay. Are you? What is the point of saying that? You know, was weird? I don't know. You like the Rubik's Cube? Is that weird? Do you love chess? Is that weird? Do you golf obsessively like Brett Baer? Is that weird? You know, I don't know. I just thought we were supposed to be a melting pot. I'm a little disillusioned, Brett. All right.
It's weird.
Yeah, I agree. Hey, Brett, thanks so much. I'll talk to you soon. Look forward to your coverage.
We'll see you.
All right. Meanwhile, don't forget One Nation. We'll have a special show on Saturday night, and then I'll be on Fox and Friends in the morning from 6 until 10. So that'll be exciting to work on a Sunday because the DNC is in Chicago. So it's important for me to be live in New York. So when we come back, your calls, or you can write me at BrianKilmeade.com. Don't move.
Covering this election year like no other, it's Brian Kilmeade.
Pull up a chair and join me, Rachel Campos Duffy.
And me, former U.S. Congressman Sean Duffy, as we share our perspective on the discussions happening at kitchen tables across America.
Download From the Kitchen Table, The Duffys, at foxnewspodcasts.com or wherever you download podcasts.
A talk show that's real. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Back in May, we did. We saw Biden trailing in all of the swing states or at best tied. Right now, Harris is either leading or tied with Trump in those swing states. There's one state, Nevada, which she's still trailing in. But overall, if you look at those seven swing states, Harris is up again within the margin, but up 48-47. Biden was down by 3 points.
And there you go. We are seeing right now momentum on the other side, but we're not seeing any policies from the other side. And I thought Nikki Haley was 100% right when she said, regardless of what you think, that she should be doing interviews and laying out policy positions. She's not. So what are you going to do about it? What you're going to do about it is use stuff that she said in the past, say these are the policies. And then if she wants to walk that back and change it, she's got to explain it. It's going to be on her. And who's she going to explain it to? In a speech? Eventually, she'll have to explain it to a reporter. Now, if it's Rachel Maddow, who's just going to throw up layups, I'm not sure if she gets the why. I'm not sure that even counts. But if anybody else, like Lester Holt, who obviously wants us to be successful, but will ask, you know, why do you not want private payer insurance plans to go away? Why do you believe that fracking's better now? Why is it okay to get an offshore drilling? Are you going to stop them with regulations, if not with the actual legislation? Are you going to ever clamp down on Iran? And why? Why did you allow them to sell their oil? What is the ramifications of ignoring the Abraham Accords? You know, is it true that you met with the divest people with the Israel, anti-Israel movement? So I'm going to assume that everything's true unless further notice. And if they don't give a why, you got to ask yourself, is that you got to really wonder, once they're elected, you're not going to be able to control them. They're telling you that you can't be trusting them. And you look at their track record, you got to think that if you want a very liberal presidency, go ahead. But if they pretend to be conservative, understand they are indeed pretending. And it's not indeed true at all. Here's what Nikki Haley said to do, Cut 5.
What I will tell you is the Republican Party needs to make a serious shift here. And the first thing is the Republican Party, Donald Trump, people here at Fox, quit complaining that she's not giving an interview. You don't need an interview from Kamala Harris. I take her at her word. I take her at her word that she wants to raise taxes for households over $100,000, that she wants to add a pharmaceutical tax and a health care tax. I take her at her word that she thinks that illegal immigrants should be able to vote and be given driver's licenses. I take her at her word that she wants to ban fracking and kill a bunch of U.S. jobs.
So there you go. That's what you run on. And that's what you should do. And I think it starts today. So President Trump is going to be in Fayetteville, in Asheville, North Carolina. Okay? So go to Asheville, North Carolina, and talk about the economy today, because you got about a 3-point lead in North Carolina. It's always going to be tough. Remember, they have a Democratic governor, which means you have a Democratic machine you got to overcome. That's what Georgia has, a Republican machine, even though it's gettable for Democrats and has been, as they have two Democratic senators. You got the Kemp machine. Now you got the Cooper machine you're going against. Even though you have that lead and you're going to even have your RNC there in 2020, you got to talk to the economy and talk directly to people and hit them with how much eggs are, how much gas is, how much bacon is, what your grocery bill is, what your insurance bill is. And then you hit them with that and say, this is what I'm going to do. And this is what I've done in the past. I think that's a great message.
A radio show like no other. It's Brian Kilmeade.
It is a big movement, and it's a lot of independent women that are coming over and right now supporting Harris. I think, you know, to Jonathan's point, when you look at who those undecided voters are, or people who are still saying, maybe I'll vote third party, they are very cross-pressured on the following. They feel very anxious about the economy. They do feel like inflation is getting worse at a higher level than the overall electorate. They don't like Donald Trump personally.
Right. But you have to somehow, if you're Trump, and it's Amy Walter of the Cook Report, but if you're Trump, you have to say, hey, let's keep that out of it. Let's just talk about my economy compared to this one. And don't let her say that wasn't my economy, that was Joe Biden's, because you can't say I'm the last person in the room, talk about how great Bidenomics is, and say, well, that wasn't me. Joining us now is James Dixon. He covers Michigan for the New York Post, vital state for both. Basically a dead heat. James, welcome to Brian Kilmeade Show.
Hey, Brian, thank you so much for having me.
No problem. First off, on the economy. How much does the economy matter to the people of Michigan? Is it number one as far as you could tell?
It matters quite a bit. I mean, so, you know, we come from the state that put the world on wheels. Auto heritage is a big thing. But here we have some of our biggest companies. You know, Stellantis just had layoffs, slow sales. Last year they had to lay people off because of California air emission regulations. So that's not the kind of thing that I think is going to look favorably on Kamala Harris as she tries to make that case in Michigan. And so I do think it'll be about a lot more than personalities. You know, who can honestly say they're better off than they were 4 or 5 years ago?
We're going to find out Friday if the message is going to be, yeah, it was better, but I've learned a lot, and those were not my policies. I'm fascinated to see if she's going to begin to walk away from Joe Biden, because nobody thinks Joe Biden's economy is better than Donald Trump's economy.
Well, and she'd have to sprint away from Biden, and I don't see how you do that. The media somehow has let Harris off the hook for obviously being complicit and America having a president who was not up for the job. We've decided that's no big deal. Okay, great. But you're responsible for the border. You have to have some say on the economy. And if you didn't have any impact on what's happened, why were you the vice president and why should you be president? The argument, either way you go, it doesn't look good for Harris. What can you say you will do for the American people other than not be Donald Trump?
Remember, John James got so close to for that Senate race, and it's been close in the past. We've had Republican governors in Michigan. Right now, Elise Slotkin is, it looks like 7 points up on Mike Rogers on an average poll, but Rogers just got the nomination a short time ago. So looking at the state of Michigan right now, do you think they're open to the Republican Party?
I think it is a huge uphill battle. Of the, 7 million voter registrations, Democrats are in the fours, Republicans are in the twos right now. There basically is not a functional Michigan Republican Party. Efforts are afoot to rebuild that. But there's no infrastructure. And a lot of the people who've been involved in the winning of the past, some of them have become never Trumpers. Some of them are just out of the game. Rick Snyder, actually, the entire Michigan House is up for election in November. Snyder's trying to retake the House on the theory that, hey, if you can at least slow Whitmer down, turn her into a lame duck, at least you'll stop the bleeding in Michigan. But yeah, a lot of the talent and the infrastructure from years past, when Republicans dominated in Michigan, is all gone now. It would all have to be rebuilt.
So what about the anti-Israeli movement, the pro-Palestinian, the pro-Hamas, the Muslim community that seems so adamant against Joe Biden and his policies, which are the same policies Kamala Harris, when she went to Michigan.
Right.
Yeah, so I guess they're the, what do they call, they voted non-committed last time?
Uncommitted, yeah.
So how big is that? And how different is it from Biden to Harris?
So in February, during the presidential primary, Biden got something like 625,000 votes, but 100,000 people voted uncommitted, which was a large number. So obviously Biden got a lot more votes than the uncommitted, but that's the kind of number you'd almost see for never Trump. I think about a poll I just saw in Oakland County where even among Republicans, Trump had like a 15% unfavorable, whereas Democrats are 99.1 favorable on Harris. So in effect, it became like a never Biden wing within the Democrat coalition. And so I was just out in Dearborn talking to those folks last week, and basically what they had to say is they view Harris with fresh eyes, but they need to see something different than what they've seen from Biden, or she could well find herself in the same position. Uncommitted.
Right. Right now, it's almost a generic Democrat that's running.
And that's exactly it.
So
you've been given nothing to really rally around other than they wear our color blue no matter who, and Harris is not orange.
James Dixon covers Michigan for the New York Post and has given us an insight into that vital state to the outcome of this election. So when you look at Mike Rogers as a candidate, as a Senate candidate, and look at a guy that was a congressman, successful, an impactful one, an FBI guy with a military background, who has a profile that was bigger because he was on a network, I think CNN, as a contributor for a while. If there was somebody seeming to build to be successful in Michigan, it's him. How quick do you, if at all, do you think that gap closes with Slotkin?
I think it'll be a really tough one because those very things you mentioned, man, in 2004, that would have been the ideal Republican. But in 2024, especially the FBI connection, when that's the very organization that raids the Mar-a-Lago and that's been in complicit in so much of this lawfare that we've seen, that's not necessarily viewed as a positive. And so there's kind of a cynicism in conservative circles in Michigan that views Slotkin versus Rogers as a race of the security state. Essentially, it's the FBI versus the CIA. Those aren't great choices to the freedom movement. So it's tough to get people excited. Mm-hmm. Plus, you have the fact that Rogers is a known commodity, so there's not a lot of upside you can do. No one's going to change their mind on what they think about Mike Rogers at this late date.
So he would need Trump to drag him across the finish line.
Absolutely. If Mike Rogers got across the finish line, that would mean that Donald Trump's coattails are so incredibly strong that it's just going to be a red wave.
Wow, that would be interesting if he could do it. Well, he was en route to doing that against Joe Biden, and they have someone here who's younger but has the same policies, but has a record of just saying bizarre things when asked off script. She's a train wreck, but the media is spinning it as if she emerged out of nowhere with all the talent to spare, a female Barack Obama, as if we didn't think, we don't remember that Jamie Raskin and Nancy Pelosi were on CNN saying, you know, maybe it's time, if I could paraphrase, for Joe Biden to pick another running mate.
Right. Right. And so Harris has been extremely stage managed to that point. But now even the media is getting restless. I think about that Time magazine cover, right? So the media tells us that Kamala Harris is the embodiment of black girl joy. Okay, why then would Time magazine portray her as gray and flat and not even smiling? Trump, said she looked like Melania Trump, not right. Like Kamala Harris. So what that tells you is that Time thinks that the only Kamala Harris that America will accept is that flat lady who looks like a British prime minister. They wouldn't accept her as she is because if she smiles, she might laugh and then she might cackle. And then you'd see the real her. So all this fear, all this hiding and avoidance of the media tells me that Team Harris believes that the more Harris that the American people see, they won't like her.
Yeah, I guess we're going to see what happens in terms of fundraising. I know the president's going to, the former president's going to be back there as much as he possibly can. We'll see what kind of crowds he gets. I also am curious to see what's going to happen at the colleges. You got this liberal campus, the University of Michigan, Michigan State. And I think there's going to be a lot of sit-ins, a lot of encampments, and that issue of Israel is going to be front and center. Are we going to watch a party have to decide whether they're going to embrace the Muslim community by walking away from Israel or just stay pro-Israel like Republicans are and let the chips fall where they may? What do you expect in the fall? Because in New York here, they expect even bigger riots.
That would just be incredible, and that would be terrible for the Democratic coalition. For one, it turns off normal people. I mean, during the graduation at the University of Michigan, you couldn't even walk on the Diag, you know, the main square of the campus, because it was overtaken. They waited until after graduation to clear it out. This is a space that taxpayers pay for, alumni want to enjoy, and it's your right as a citizen to walk anywhere on public grounds. But here you had in Ann Arbor, Michigan, of all places, people basically saying you couldn't. And so that's not good. And if all those people are sitting around in tents and not voting and they're uncommitted and they can only be placated by policies that America will never accept, it leaves Democrats where they are now, which is I think their best strategy is actually to do nothing. So if you ask for a ceasefire, you still won't get it. So there's no point in asking for it. Just basically hope that people realize that the only alternative to Harris is Donald Trump and that you can freak them out to go into the polls anyway.
Well, he would definitely get their attention if he did come back. And I know these colleges are not going to pull back. They have had plenty of time to design a strategy that won't embarrass the university. But the one thing you'll see is the DNC. If you see how big those protests are there's four major organizations who have asked for permission to rally, have parades. We'll see what's going to happen in Chicago right next door. James, thanks so much. Look forward to your coverage in Michigan.
Thank you, Brian.
You got it. So Harris has a 1.8 base lead on the last 11 polls, 48 to 46. All right, listen to the Brian Kilmeade Show. When we come back, number to call, 1-866-408-7669. Brian Kilmeade Show.
Hear the ins and outs of the 2024 election right here. The Brian Kilmeade Show. The more you listen, the more you'll know. It's Brian Kilmeade.
I had not one person come up to me and say, gee, I wish that it would have turned out differently. I didn't like doing it because I became the person I've always hated. The guy on the sideline, sitting on TV, taking cheap shots. We in the arena. We got the dust, the dirt. We're fighting every day. You're killing us. You're helping Trump. And I understand all that. And nothing that happened to this or any criticism that I got was I surprised about. I like Joe Biden. I didn't like myself, but I didn't think I had another option. I didn't see another way out.
So he basically said, if Joe Biden runs, that's James Carville, we will lose. And the next thing you know, George Cooney writes the column. Countless numbers of lawmakers stand up and say they're not going to, they're pushing for him to leave. Nancy Pelosi put the knife in his back in the front, kicked him to the curb, and now it's done. And now they have energy on their side, but they have a bad candidate. Don't let anyone kid you. I mean, she was not good on her feet. Her policies are terrible. She doesn't put the work in. Nothing has changed. She's talking about joy and how she's running with the coach, who's a working class moderate, when he's a lefty. He's a lefty governor. And if you want to see him in action, notice he took no action during the George Floyd riots, and notice how terribly he handled the COVID, as well as the snitch lines, and now his questionable service on 25 years. I salute that. But what his men think of him for not going is impossible to ignore. And I mean going to war when he was supposed to. And now his excuse doesn't fly with people that know. They said that we were all were meeting. We knew we were going to be deployed to Iraq. He put his papers in, didn't tell us. So that is even questionable. We'll see if this is going to come up. But right now, just doing rallies, people are happy to see her. They're Democrats. I believe there are slightly more Democrats than Republicans in this country. But it's the undecideds that are going to do it in the big states. It's basically a dead heat. And it's Trump's to win or lose. I believe that because he's got the policies. And the only way she can win is to take Trump's policies. She took one already, but it's not the major one. He's also doesn't have the credibility. First, she has to blow up Joe Biden's credibility and say, he hurt me. I want to do different things, but he wouldn't let me. He made me stand behind Bidenomics. Maybe you might do the sexist thing. As a woman, I had to stand back while a man screwed up the economy. That's a little bit different of a narrative, but it might be the only thing that could buy to sell the fact that she's trying to sell herself as a moderate. Joe Biden was asked by Peter Ducey yesterday about this new Kamala Harris, her policies. Are they different than yours? Is she more lefty? Cut 34.
How much more progressive is Vice President Harris than you as a candidate in the general?
The issues we've worked on together have made great progress economically. No one calls what we did on infrastructure progressive. It's a good policy.
Everybody does, and nothing's been done. One of your infrastructure things is typical inefficient government. 8 terminals have been built. No rural communities have been hooked up to the internet. So the Inflation Reduction Act, look at it. He said it was mislabeled. It's all about green technology. Here's Trump on the economy, cut 32.
The thing that they really is making them angry is what Kamala and Biden have allowed to happen to the economy. It's a disaster with inflation. The inflation, doesn't matter what you make. The inflation has eaten you alive. If you're a worker or if you're a middle income person, you can't afford. You know, 5 years ago, people were saving a lot of money. Today, they're using all their money and borrowing money just to live. It's a horrible thing that's happening.
So gas is up 49%, groceries 21%, energy 32%, daycare 16%, rent 22%, car insurance 52%, transportation 36%. As dry as that sounds, if I'm making an economic speech in North Carolina today, I'm saying that. Also, who do you trust to handle the economy? Harris is getting closer than Biden, but it's still 45-38 Trump. Trump has got to make sure she doesn't take his policies. Not only did she take the tips thing, no tax on tips, which is going to cost the economy billions, but it could really inject a lot into the economy because generally you would think a waiter, waitress, caddy, anybody in the tip professions might take that money and go buy stuff that's going to help the economy in the long run. Very few put into their mattress or pillowcase. So that should, in theory, put more money in play, more money in circulation, also help those hospitality jobs get filled. True. And it's not going to affect the kitchen because the kitchen gets higher wages. The front of the house is the one who lives off tips. You get below minimum wage for a reason. When you raise it up, you force everyone out of business. Guess what she's going to bring up? And I despise this because it just isolates success and make it seem like a bad thing. They say she does a great job at prosecuting price fixing and gouging from big businesses. I don't know. I was reporting last weekend with John Taffer how many restaurant chains have gone out of business because of minimum wage predominantly, or people don't have the excess income to go out to eat places like Rubio's and different Fridays across the country. And then you have supermarkets. I think 300 Stop and Shops are being closed. Is that an example of price gouging? It's a little crazy. So Donald Trump's got to point that out. And not talk about skin color, don't care about gender, don't care about race, couldn't care if she has seven nationalities. I really don't care. I really, really, really don't care people's background. It doesn't. Do I think about J.D. Vance and has an Indian wife or that Nikki Haley was Indian, Indian American? No, I just don't. I don't even think about it. I think about, wow, this woman's from Harvard, graduated with honors from Harvard. That's where they met in a study group for law. Evidently, Harvard encourages you to study together in this unit, and the other one will pay for you to go out to eat to build a bond between you so you help each other. That's how they met. Do you think I think about, well, white guy J.D. Vance met a Indian American, and that's what Nikki Haley was saying yesterday. People don't care about crowd size. They don't care about nationality. They don't even care about gender. Just show them what you can do.
News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan. It's the fastest growing radio talk show. Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the latest moments of the Brian Kilmeade Show. I come to you from 48th and 6th. Midtown Manhattan is flat out overrun with illegal immigrants. You think I'm exaggerating? Cover the New York Post today. $5 billion we're spending a year on illegal immigrants. We're talking about encampments. We're talking about hotels. We're talking about billions for food and clothing and everything that they need. And, you know, in some states, they give free tuition to college. That's what they're doing out in California. It is insane. That's what they're doing in Minnesota. That's what they're proposing. But with us right now to talk about what this means to the average everyday person and how it can figure into a campaign and a winning one for Donald Trump is Donald Trump's co-manager, campaign manager, Chris LaCivita, and GOP political strategist. Chris, welcome back.
Brian, thanks for having me. Good to be back.
All right, so Chris, tell me the game plan to beat Kamala Harris. This is not totally a surprise to you, even though at the RNC it looked like since the assassination attempt that maybe Joe Biden was going to weather the storm. He didn't. So Harris has been in for a few weeks now. What's the game plan for victory?
You know, it's pretty simple, but you're right. After the attempted assassination of the president and then the RNC convention, which was fantastic, highlighting all of the issues and the differences between essentially Republicans and Democrats when you talk about inflation and the border and et cetera, the Democrats, you know, essentially from our perspective, you know, instituted a coup. And be that as it may, they gave, you know, obviously Kamala Harris is now the nominee. She's picked, a governor from Minnesota, Waltz, who's just, I couldn't even begin to figure out where he is on the spectrum as it relates to his, how liberal he is. But the press has given her a free ride. I mean, and everybody knows that it's been you know, a few weeks without her answering questions. She went weeks without even having to answer questions. So they gave her a bit of a honeymoon. They're now going into the Democrat convention where, you know, they're going to try and put on the show. But look, it's pretty simple. This morning, you know, the CPI came out, and the question that you have to ask yourself really is are you paying more or less for things now than you did 4 years ago. And that's perhaps the singular biggest contrast that exists between Donald Trump and Kamala Harris, which is the state of the economy. And despite COVID and everything else that was thrown in President Trump's way, he built the world's greatest economy, then COVID wrecked it, then he did it again. And so that's the single biggest issue contrast. When you think about it, Brian, since Harris has been vice president, gas is up 51%, electricity 32%, fuel oil 50%, airfare 23%, hotels 51%, food, groceries over 21%, baby food 30%. Rent 22%. So things have exploded in cost. And, while you have the Harris campaign and while you have the Main Street media gaslighting the American people saying, oh, it's fine, everything's fine, Americans are hurting, and they know that. And Americans are smarter than the Democrats give them credit for. They're not going to be played. Right. We've laid out, I think, a pretty comprehensive economic plan. And when you think about it, that was reinforced by the fact that, the first policy proposal that Kamala Harris came out with was to basically steal Donald Trump's plan of no taxing on tips.
How do you feel about that? Because Joe Biden's for it, too, and they might even offer it as legislation, Chris.
Well, look, here's the thing. Good politics makes good policy. And the Democrats are so desperate to avoid any responsibility for what they've created that they're literally willing to recast themselves in a very cynical attempt to fool voters. And it's, it's just up to us to make sure that those they're just not bought. I mean, you have to remember when President Trump announced this issue in June in Vegas, it was 109 degrees that day. I remember like it was yesterday. And he was roundly criticized by the press. CBS News ran this headline, which was it will cost, when Republicans want to cut taxes, that's the only time the Democrats and the press talk about how much it'll cost, something costs, never mind the fact that that's a cost to a refund to the American people. But so roundly criticized the proposal. And, it's too expensive. It's a joke. It doesn't make a difference. Now all of a sudden it's the greatest thing since sliced bread. That's a very cynical attempt to reshape and reformat things. Again, it's up to us to make sure that people don't buy it.
Gotcha. So Chris Lacevita, our guest. Chris, here's what Nikki Haley was on. She doesn't do much these days, but she was on with Special Report last night. Advice to you guys. Cut to.
I want this campaign to win. But the campaign is not going to win talking about crowd sizes. It's not going to win talking about what race Kamala Harris is. It's not going to win talking about whether she's dumb. It's not. You can't win on those things. The American people are smart. Treat them like they're smart.
Do you think the campaign is missing the mark on those things?
I think the campaign needs to focus. That's the main thing. Look, this is a winnable election, but you need to focus.
Your thought about that, is she right?
Well, look, here's the thing. If you look at what the national media decides it's going to talk about, right, and decide what they want to emphasize, that's, they'll pull that stuff out from 5 years ago, 4 years ago, 3 years ago. It's a losing battle. When the president did his press conference at Mar-a-Lago a little over a week ago and literally stood in front of the press, the entire press, for an hour and took every conceivable question. None of those answers on the vast majority of those questions have ever been talked about. I mean, he talked about inflation. He talked about where we are in the world stage. Look, the focus of the campaign has always been about putting Americans in a better position to be successful. And it's going to continue to be that way. And again, we're focusing on these key issues of illegal immigration. Kamala Harris comes out last night by some aide, some campaign person and says she's no longer for Medicare for All.
Yes.
Well, that's just a joke, because there's a ton of film with her talking about that's her number one policy proposal. So again,
but she's going to say she evolved, Chris Acevedo. You know, she's going to say she evolved on that. She evolved on fracking. She's about to do that Friday. I'll give her first economic speech. So if she says she evolved on that, what's your counterpunch?
Well, the counterpunch is, can you believe anything she says? Because for years up to now, she's espoused these positions. I mean, she believes in giving Social Security benefits to illegal aliens. Now, if you're a recipient of Social Security and you know how dire the trust fund is, are you willing and are you going to trust that Kamala Harris isn't going to bankrupt Social Security and Medicare by giving it away to illegals? That's an awful big leap for a lot of people.
So you got to walk away from Bidenomics. You can't stand behind Bidenomics and at the same time walk away from it while you're still in the administration. It seems bizarre. I want you to hear
Bidenomics is working, according to Kamala Harris.
The Daily Mail says this. It says insider say that Trump behind the scenes at Mar-a-Lago is upset about picking J.D. Vance, that he has regrets about it. Would you say, is there any accuracy to that?
No, zero, none. I generally don't refer to British newspapers as my first place of information. I'll say that, number one. Number two, no, it's 100% not true. They talk 2-3 times a day at least. J.D.'s been fantastic in terms of laying the wood to Waltz and to Kamala Harris. He's been out campaigning. He's been a great partner. And no, it's fake news.
I think he was brilliant over the weekend on three network shows. Here's Peter Navarro, fresh out of prison, cut 15.
Trump doesn't need feasts now. He needs votes. And the current rally formula is simply not sufficiently focused on the very stark policy differences between him and Kamala Harris that will swing voters in key battleground states.
So he says your rally formula isn't working.
Right. Well, I mean, look, it's about what we talk about and what the focus is on the issues. I mean, a lot of people can say a lot of different things, but we're about pushing very specific messages. Those messages, Peter's right about pushing policy differences. That's the number one goal of the president. It's the number one goal of the campaign. And we'll take every opportunity we can to actually do that. Plus, you know, we also can't forget that you know, this is also a game of turnout. And, you know, we have to make sure that our people are motivated. We've been engaged in efforts across the country with T-47 and our grassroots operations to do that. And, you know, look, it's August. It's the middle of August, and the Democrats swapped out their nominee, and they put in somebody else who's never received a vote for president, who's never really been tested. And, you know, we have plenty of time, and we're in a very good position.
So it's interesting, because now you have the DNC coming up. And traditionally, and you've been doing this for a long time, traditionally the other party goes kind of dark. But you only have 80 days, and you just mentioned all the unique challenges. What is the strategy during the DNC where they're just going to bash Trump all day? He didn't love it in 2016. I knew that. And now he's not going to love it now. What's your thought? Are you going to keep him from watching it? And what is your thought from how do you get some press during that time? Or do you even try?
Well, first of all, you don't go to Donald Trump and say, don't watch the news. I mean, don't watch the Democratic convention. That would never enter into the conversation. And besides, you know, people forget this is a guy who has built a very big, a very successful worldwide brand. So, you know, we value all of those things. But this much I will tell you, we will not give the left 1 inch. We're not going to give them 1 minute. We're not going to give them 1 inch. We're not going to give them 1 second of free time. We're going to take advantage of every opportunity that we can create to ensure the American people know the differences and the vital differences between, you know, Donald Trump's campaign and President Trump and Kamala Harris and the leftist Democrats, because the fate of the country, we truly believe, hangs in the balance.
So what will you do, Chris? What will you do?
We can
Do you have rallies planned?
The election's over. Oh, we've got a battle plan, and I'm not going to sit and communicate it to the world today, but it's a very aggressive plan that puts us in a position to drive what we need to. I mean, look, if we spend the next 2 weeks talking about, you know, the differences in the price of gasoline, bread, food, you know, these types of things, and people have a clear and distinct understanding that if they vote for Kamala Harris, open borders becomes basic standard policy. The rise in crime continues to stay the same. You know, people are going to start worrying about personal security, national security, and their economic security, and that's what this is about.
Amy Walter of the Cook Report says Harris is now leading or tied with Trump in 6 of the 7 swing states. Do your polling say the same thing?
No. And as a matter of fact, the swing state polling, we still have an advantage in the Electoral College. The map still does not favor. We still have over 20 different paths to get to 270, she's got 2 or 3. And so and understand that in large part, they're trying to redefine Kamala Harris as this new person who just showed up on the scene. And we have 12 years of information, 12 years of footage of her talking about eliminating Medicaid and Medicare, essentially giving illegals free benefits, taxpayer-funded benefits from health care to schooling. And then, of course, her record on crime, which is abysmal. So, you know, we're very confident in the plan that we have laid out.
So I think it was about a week ago. It looks like President Trump was really ticked off at Brian Kemp again. I guess he was upset at Mrs. Kemp, too. Since that time, I saw that Lindsey Graham talked to him, and he came out and he said, I'm going to help how I can. But the two aren't talking. Donald Trump says, I don't know if it's salvageable. You need Georgia. Kemp's successful governor. What can you do to bring them together? Or do you not think the relationship is salvageable?
Well, I mean, I don't get into this level of specifics. I just know this, that, the campaign, the president, very much focused on winning Georgia. Kemp very much wanted to win Georgia. And so I think having the common bond of wanting to win in November is stronger than anything. We have a great organization down there, and we have some great grassroots leaders. I mean, hell, we've got tens of thousands of diehard Trump supporters that are knocking on doors and doing those key things. So and actually, Brian, they actually do a lot of work with certain elements of the Brian Kemp, you know, Governor Kemp's team. So, I mean, our focus has been really the nuts and bolts aspect of campaigning. We have a very different operation down there fueled by a MAGA Nation in the state of Georgia. And we accept help and assistance from anybody.
Gotcha.
So, we'll be going back down there. We've been on TV down there for a while. I'm very, very bullish in Georgia.
Well, I'll tell you what, Donald Trump's got a Marine who's got his back, and I know you guys are going to fight through the finish. It's a new challenge, but you've been training your whole life for new challenges.
You got it.
It's great seeing you, Chris. Thanks for the time. I know our audience really appreciates it. I know you don't
Brian,
do much,
thanks.
So we enjoy it. Thank you.
Thanks. Take care. Talk to you soon.
Chris LaCivita, Donald Trump's co-campaign manager. Back in a moment.
Newsmakers and newsbreakers. Hear it first on the Brian Kilmeade Show. If you're interested in it, Brian's talking about it. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
Hey, welcome back. You know, in about 5 minutes, we're going to talk to Kurt Volker, former U.S. ambassador in NATO, former United States special representative for Ukraine negotiations. Ukraine's made some huge progress. I know it's not your number one thing out there, but it's important for the country. Forget about policy. But I also want you to remember this. 3 years ago today, the Kabul fell, and we had to get all our guys out. And we didn't. And we lost 13 at Abbey Gate. And the president never took a briefing about what went wrong. He was said, first read it. Then they said, we'll give you a verbal. Then they said, it's going to be too long. He goes, we can knock it down to 15 minutes. Ultimately, he said no. He didn't want to know what's going on. And you know what Kamala Harris said? And I have the soundbite. Were you the last one in the room to Dana Bash before he made that decision, announced that decision? She said yes. So please don't tell me you're going to walk away from that. And if you are, I'd love to see that interview. Did you agree with President Biden's decision to pull out of Kabul and pull all our troops out? And the answer is yes. Congratulations. You officially co-authored the biggest military disaster in history. And the answer is no. Then please, you have just vilified the guy you work with and lied for the last 3 years. And did you push back at that time? Because you told Dana Bash you didn't. Now you're telling me you did? Can't have it both ways.
Radio that makes you think. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
This launch this major attack, the U.S. military will strike back. Why can't you just clearly say that?
I think we've been very clear that we're going to support the defense of Israel, and I'm not going to speculate about potential future attacks by Iran.
Well, there's so much going on. I mean, we are waiting now. Iran has promised to answer back. We are convinced they will, or else we wouldn't have all of our naval assets in the region, as close as they were, as ready to act. You could argue that we have more assets in the region now than we did when Iran originally attacked with 300 rockets and missiles. And so was our, so were their neighbors of Israel. So having said that, nothing's happened. And tomorrow, ceasefire talks are supposed to resume. We're also going to talk about what's happening in Ukraine. Let's bring Kurt Volker into the mix, former U.S. ambassador to NATO, former United States special representative for Ukraine negotiations. Kurt, should we look at the ceasefire negotiations different from Iran's retaliation?
Yeah, I think so. I'm skeptical about these ceasefire negotiations as long as Hamas continues to hold these hostages. We're trying to say we'll have a ceasefire and then get the hostages out. That's the U.S. position. I don't think Hamas sees it that way at all. I think that if they get a ceasefire, it's kind of a reward for them and it shows that taking and holding these hostages worked. So we need not to send that message to them. We need to be instead getting those hostages out and saying no ceasefire until then.
But nothing, obviously, that's not going to work. It hasn't worked to this point yet. And they've done great jobs. They've done a great job in various cities. I saw they listed 18 terrorists they killed over the weekend. Sadly, there were some civilian deaths. But if you're Israel, never bring this up. I hope they're talking about behind closed doors. If their nucleus of their command structure survives, they win. So and we'll be right back here in 8 months with maybe a
more severe attack. That's exactly right. So we should not be giving them a ceasefire in place and letting them recover and incentivizing this hostage taking that they've done. Now we have to do the opposite.
So do you disagree? So you disagree with the pressure being put on Netanyahu and the Israelis?
Yes, very much. I think that we should ease the pressure. We should be sending a signal to Hamas. You get these hostages out now. We work with Israel to get those hostages out. And the other element on this that we haven't talked about, of course, is the threat to Iran. We need to be sending a signal to Iran, not just don't, as President Biden has said, but that if you do, you will be hit.
We have no interest in showing any hostility towards Iran, just writing them checks of $6 billion, stopping them from selling their oil. So this way they continue to fortify their government that represses their own people.
Yeah, they feel they can do this with impunity, and they may very well yet again choose to use their proxies to attack Israel, which can be very, very serious still. And in doing so, avoid any direct consequences.
You're not immune to the politics of this, and you know what's happening in November. And you also know that it looks like these college protests are going to be reinvigorated and supported even further. Your thoughts about the pressure put on the DNC this week of protests, anti-Israeli protests, pro-Hamas and Palestinian protests, as well as what's going to happen in the fall. You know that figures into this, even though in the perfect world it wouldn't. So what do you do if you're the Democratic Party now in power, for now?
Well, I'd say what they're doing right now is probably what anyone would do in their situation, is beg for a ceasefire, try to get things to calm down, take the temperature down, because you don't want this fissure within the Democratic Party to explode during the conference, the convention, or during the November election. And the problem is that they are very deeply divided, and There's a good part of the Democratic Party that feels that Israel is in the wrong and they want to do everything possible to support Hamas. And another big portion of the Democratic Party knows that, you know, we have to back Israel. Israel's the only democratic country in the region. They're not the terrorists Hamas is. So that fissure can really blow up on the Democrats, and they just want to avoid that happening.
So what's your prediction? And then I want to move on to 3 years since the Afghanistan evacuation. But what's your prediction here? I mean, we thought there was going to be attack, and I'm not looking forward to it, but we thought there were going to be attack about 5 days ago, and we're still waiting.
Yeah, my guess, if I just had to take a wild guess, how is this likely to look? Iran will want to do something from Iran just to make a point, but it's not going to be as tough and heavy as it could be. And they will instead have Hezbollah launch a big attack against Israel, which is much closer and much harder for Israel to defend against. And in doing that, hope that they get very minor blowback against Iran, and it just creates more of an Israel-Hezbollah dynamic without any consequences directly on Iranian territory.
That would be we'll see what happens. I think on some level, in reality, Israel almost wants an excuse to take out their nuclear facilities, and an attack of 300-plus rockets and missiles, I don't think we'd ever – even if we begged them to have a measured response, they would do it, because we can't let, I mean, you know, we can, the world cannot allow them to have a nuclear weapon. Right. And Israel, what we don't understand about never again, they see the Holocaust as yesterday and October 7th as hours ago.
Yeah. And this is a great segue to talking about Ukraine as well, too, because what we see with Russia is they do things with impunity because they have a nuclear weapon. And you don't want Iran to be even more emboldened, saying, well, we've got a nuclear weapon now, too, and so you can't attack us because we might use it. That creates all the wrong incentives in the world. People have to know that just because you have a nuclear weapon doesn't mean you get away with things. Actually, it means that we have to hold you even more to account.
So let's talk about Ukraine. I love the move. They go into Kursk. They've taken over 28 separate towns, maybe more. The Russians are scrambling to stop it. Putin doing public berating some of his officials publicly. Mm-hmm. What is the impact of this? Because it's still a bit of a high risk because you're taking Ukrainian troops and moving them out of Ukraine into Russia.
Yeah, it's a tremendous move. And Vladimir Putin is now the only Russian leader since World War II to have provoked an invasion of Russia and lost Russian territory. So remember before this, he was comparing himself to Peter the Great and Catherine the Great. He's an accumulator of Russian lands. Well, now he ends up looking more like Tsar Nicholas II, who lost World War I and lost the country. So this is really bad for Putin's image. Let's just put it that way. And for Ukraine, what they've done is they have now successfully forced Russia to move some of its forces out of Ukraine in order to defend Russia. This is a big deal. Ukraine was not making any gains against these really big and tough Russian fortifications that they put inside Ukraine, but they've made huge gains now inside Russia, and they're forcing Russia to pull back. And if anyone talks about a peace dynamic in the future, it's no longer only about how much Ukraine gives up. It's going to be a trade of some kind.
The only way you could ever have any talks is to do that. But what they've also done, Ambassador, is really destroy the do tremendous damage on the Russian Navy without a Navy.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this is unbelievable.
Russia is not able to operate in the Western Black Sea anymore. And just last week, they took out a nuclear-powered submarine that was in dock. That is really significant. I think the Russians have basically had to shut down their operations in the Black Sea.
It's incredible what's happening now, and we'll see what happens coming forward. But I get the sense that the U.S. was not given a heads up on that, and there are still restrictions on the ATACMS, right, and different things we could do with the different things they can do with the material that we've given them, including the F-16s. I assume they've gotten by now. So how do you feel about these restrictions and how it relates to escalation?
These restrictions make no sense at all, because Russia is attacking Ukraine every day, and they're doing it from bases in Russian territory. The aircraft lift off, they fire from Russian airspace, they're sending these glide bombs, they're killing Ukrainian civilians, they're killing the energy infrastructure. It is only normal and fair for Ukraine to fight back against Russia and to tell them we don't want them to do that because we're afraid of some escalation is simply untenable. It's unacceptable. And what this operation has now shown, Ukraine has done even more than that. They've gone in and they've taken Russian territory, and it has not led to any escalation from Russia. That should tell us that Russia is not capable of that kind of escalation, and we shouldn't fear it.
Ambassador, 3 years ago, we put the most ill-advised evacuation and worst military operation in our history took place at the behest of this president. How much damage was done to the American reputation, and how much does it have to do with the turmoil we're experiencing right now?
It has everything to do with the turmoil we see now, because Putin was convinced that we did not have the will to fight. When he saw that we would not allow our forces out of the air base in Kabul to go rescue Americans who were stranded in Kabul, he knew we didn't have a will to fight then. And so that, I think, convinced him that it was safe to go into Ukraine. Once he goes into Ukraine, and then we're putting all kinds of restrictions on the Ukrainians and slow-rolling assistance, this then gives encouragement to Iran, it gives encouragement to China, that it has accelerated this deterioration of global security. And now we see that some of these actors are even working together, like Iran and Russia teaming up, Iran giving Russia the drones that it uses, North Korea giving Russia ammunition that it uses, Russia presumably helping North Korea with some missile technology. This has now become a much more difficult and much more integrated threat globally than it was before we pulled out of Afghanistan.
And you're forgetting that Russia and China are actually doing military exercise together, too.
Absolutely, yes, and not far from our coastline.
Right. And do you believe that having Donald Trump in the White House would change anything?
Well, we have to unwind it now. And the only way you unwind it is to develop and maintain a position of strength so that our adversaries know we are strong, we are capable, and we have the will. That needs to be rebuilt. Deterrence is best. It's better not to have to fight at all because you deter your adversaries because they believe you have the will and the capability. No one believes that right now, so we have to rebuild that.
And do you believe that Trump would do that?
I think that is where he has to go. If he gets elected president for a second time, he has to rebuild that position of American strength. Now, I don't want to speak for former President Trump. Only he knows what he's going to do, and he's going to make his decisions at the time. But I don't think there's any way we stop this escalation of global conflict without rebuilding a position of American strength.
It's got to double the defense budget, and we have to, at the same time, audit the Pentagon and find out where all this money is going. We hear this sprawling, mostly civilian-run Pentagon, which is lacks efficiency, and we give them $900 billion, but how much is actually going to our defense?
Yeah, I think, this is something that, the Senate does regularly, but we need to get this more in front of the American people. We need to see what the money is being spent for. Is it effective? One of the things that we're learning from Ukraine is that our systems are so expensive that they can be overwhelmed by very low-cost swarms of drones. And so we have to be thinking about a very low-end as well as a high-end military capability. We can't let down the guard against countries like China that have high technology, but we also have to think about, what about other actors? What about drones, both naval and supporting ground forces? These are things that we had not previously thought about, and we have to make sure that there's a balance in the costs of weaponry so that if your adversary is not spending much and overwhelming, what your systems are, that's not going to be sustainable.
Understood. Ambassador, I know you think a lot about this. Those are the people you hang out with to give you this great intelligence, but it's definitely a challenging time for America, and we have to – you hate to factor in politics into it, but it's all over this because we're months from an election. Kurt Volker, thanks so much. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Brian.
And we'll keep an eye on all of this, obviously, because I know you care about it. Listen, when we come back, I'll finish up strong. Also, keep in mind, One Nation, we're queuing up for a great show Saturday night coming out of President Trump's Pennsylvania event. We'll have the strategies for both leading up to the DNC, and I'm going to be on Fox and Friends on Sunday because of the DNC, and we got a great show on One Nation on Saturday. So don't move. I'm back with your calls, or if you want to write me, BrianKilmeade.com in just a moment. We have not talked about the economy, but we will get to that next.
politics, current events, and news that affects you. Brian's got a lot more to say. Stay with Brian Kilmeade. More to know. Sponsored by Prevagen. Prevagen is the most recommended memory support brand by pharmacists.
Well, I think the focus is how much of an emotional roller coaster this must have been, or continues to be, for Jordan Child. She went out there, she did the best lure team that she could possibly do, and the error happened with the judges. The judges missed a dance element that should have brought her score up by 1/10 of a point. They missed it. Then her coach protested it, and she got that additional 10th, and that's why Jordan Childs was awarded initially the bronze medal and was on the Olympic medal ceremony experience. And now look what's happening. I don't understand.
Well, Dominic Dawes weighing in on Jordan Childs' situation, who she'd had her bronze medal taken away, not officially, but about to be, and given it to the Romanian, even though she had the higher score. It was all about getting to the judges with the protest right away to do the math right. Even though they did it and they reversed it and they gave her the bronze, they said, well, upon further review, the Romanian said it waited more than a minute, so give it back to me. Dominic Dawes believes that she can overcome it, said the same thing happened. She had a similar problem with China. Dawes clearly learned a lot about herself and her teammates in that situation, and she told us Tuesday she believes that Childs will come out of this just fine as well. Problem is, you got a short window with gymnastics, and you got to wait really 4 years to do anything right after, right? I mean, that's a big thing. Here's more from Dominic Dawes.
My final Olympic Games, which was in 2000, we as a team, we ended up competing and doing the best job that we could. We ended up getting fourth place. And then 10 years later, we were awarded an Olympic bronze medal because a Chinese gymnast was found to be underage. And so you do have these type of situations that do occur. They're completely outside of the control of some of these athletes. And you just learn to, I'm not going to say roll with it, but you learn to make sure it doesn't break you. You learn from it and you keep moving forward.
All I can tell you is we know more about this bronze award winner. She belonged, gets the bronze. Reminds me of Holyfield. He knocked out his opponent in the Olympics in the semifinals. And they said he hit her after the bell, hit him after the bell. Turns out he didn't hit him after the bell, hit him before the bell. The refs got it wrong. And therefore, they kept him with the bronze. But everybody knew Holyfield's name by the end of that Olympics. And next thing you know, everybody knew his name because he was a three-time heavyweight champ. Next, Dennis Quaid says Facebook is censoring efforts to promote his movie, Reagan. Listen.
Well, I am baffled by it, to tell you the truth, because it was banned, and they haven't even seen the film. So it seems like they don't want other people to see the film either, I guess. Yeah. But, you know, we'll set up a screening for them anytime and see for themselves. Yeah. You know, the movie is about America in the 80s and Ronald Reagan, his life, and it's about fighting communism.
Facebook told Newsweek it may have been a mistake. Reagan is supposedly the best movie. I saw Dennis Quaid at the RNC, and he told me that it's the most important movie ever made and is his favorite movie ever made. Think about all the great movies that he's been in. It comes out August 30th. I can't wait. We're still trying to get a feature with him. I thought it would be great to get him at the Reagan Library. We're trying to work that out. But going 3,000 miles and snap a finger is not easy. And lastly, Kobe Bryant's farewell game warm-up jacket fetches $336,000. The thread's called the Black Mamba. Don, just prior to dropping 60 points on the Utah Jazz, I watched that game. His last game in 2016 at the Staples Center, racked up 35 bids. The one that won was $336,000. The jacket, which was photo match for the authenticity, has been up on the SCP auctions block since mid-July. By the way, unknown who the winner is, but definitely worth it. I still can't believe that Kobe Bryant's not around. Brian Kilmeade Show.
From high atop Fox News headquarters in New York City, always seeking solutions, never sowing division. It's Brian Kilmeade.
So glad you're here. Brian Kilmeade coming to you from Midtown Manhattan, heard around the country, around the world. Same Midtown Manhattan, we had many illegal immigrants who are flat-out criminals. And we've been telling you all week long, we got another one of the Bronx. have another problem. We had Coney Island over the weekend, and then we have a situation at Randall's Island where you have these stabbings going on, and then they say, okay, you got to be out in 90 days. If you get here, get free room and board, you got to be on your way in 90 days, okay? You know what they're doing? They're leaving the big tents and buying their own small tents. They're going to Dick's Sporting Goods, buying tents, and staying in Randall's Park. It's cost this city, front page of the New York Post, $5 billion. Can you imagine that? What they could be doing with that money for vets, for kids, for students, for social services, for Americans that belong here, or for new immigrants that came here the right way? Martha McCallum in 15 minutes. But first, let's get to the big three.
Now, with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's Big Three.
Number three.
The Biden-Harris administration basically pursued a policy of appeasement since the day Donald Trump stepped out of office. As soon as Biden came in, he starts this appeasement process, playing both sides of everything. Instead of speaking from a position of strength, we're looking to see what Iran does.
Senator, it's unbelievable. Senator Bill Hagerty of Tennessee, ready for anything and everything. Israel poised to strike back should they come under multi-front attacks and threatened as they are, as we claim to prepare, we are prepared to help, I guess, as ceasefire talks are one day away. We wait, we watch, and some worry.
Number two.
Cost of groceries has gone up. The cost of gas has gone up. It's one of the highest priorities, actually, for the president and for me.
Fighting inflation is one of our administration's top economic priorities.
It will be my day one priority to fight to bring down prices.
There you go. Kamala Harris, number one issue, the economy. That'll be on Friday. She's going to speak about it for the first time and make a policy statement. But can't we see where she believes? Well, can't we see what she believes by seeing what she has said and what the Biden administration has done? Meanwhile, Trump further defines his plans. He'll do it in Asheville, North Carolina today. What do you want to hear?
Number one.
I want this campaign to win. But the campaign is not going to win talking about crowd sizes. It's not going to win talking about what race Kamala Harris is. It's not going to win talking about whether she's dumb. I think the campaign needs to focus. This is a winnable election.
That is Nikki Haley. Very valuable advice yesterday with Brett Baer. Campaign 2024. Haley offers the best game plan yet for a Trump win in November, which means overcoming an opponent who won't state any of their positions and denies most of the things she stood for. It's not easy, but it's been done. She's essentially a generic Democrat because she doesn't run with the Biden administration where she works, and she runs from her policies in which she stated she does. But I'd stick her with those policies until further notice. And then when she goes to flip-flop, you come out and you say, what do we believe, the Kamala Harris from yesterday or the one today? So Chris LaCivita doesn't do many interviews. He's co-running the Trump campaign. He joined us in a previous hour here on the Brian Kilmeade Show. And I asked him about how you run with this opponent and what the challenges are.
Well, look, here's the thing. If you look at what the national media decides it's going to talk about, right, and decide what they want to emphasize, that's, you know, they'll pull that stuff out from 5 years ago, 4 years ago, 3 years ago. It's a losing battle. You know, when the president did his press conference at Mar-a-Lago a little over a week ago and literally stood in front of the press, the entire press, for an hour and took every conceivable question, none of those answers on the vast majority of those questions have ever been talked about. I mean, he talked about inflation. He talked about where we are in the world stage. Look, the focus of the campaign has always been about putting Americans in a better position to be successful. And it's going to continue to be that way.
So Nikki Haley looked at the schedule and he knows that, you know, in the past when Trump did that congressional, the black journalist forum, he said, is she black or is she Indian? You know, in the past, he said, my crowds are bigger, and she's using AI to make her crowds look bigger, and they're bringing up the plane. Like, he brings up his plane that says Trump on it. She brings up Air Force Two on it. So she's copying everything, including the tips situation. But Nikki Haley says, stop complaining. Just keep your mind and keep your focus on one thing. Cut three.
Who is your target market? Your target market is suburban women, college-educated, independents, and conservative Democrats. That's your target market. The target issues are the economy, the fact that Kamala wants to raise taxes, the fact that she's taken money from those that didn't go to college and has given it to those that did, the fact that when Afghanistan fell, the fact that when they lifted sanctions on Iran, the fact that when they, you know, actually said that they would help Israel and then pulled back. Where was Kamala when that happened? She was sitting right next to Joe Biden in the Situation Room. This administration is Kamala Harris's administration. Everything that has happened is hers. So define her on that way.
And what is hers? His gas is up 46% since Trump left. 21% groceries, 33% energy, daycare 16%, rent 22%, if you can get a rental, by the way. Car insurance 53%. The insurance is in under, that is a underrated item, as well as is utilities for the house. People focus on just gas in the tank. And transportation 36%. When it comes to the economy, Trump's got a substantial advantage. So bring it up, and that's what he's doing today. And I would keep it on that, and I'd keep specific, and get those numbers in your head for the debate. And this president knows it, because I think that this is so much bigger than Trump-Harris, because her policies that we've watched over the last 3.5 years are so dramatically different, which is in the best interest of the country. People want to focus on January 6th and President Trump shouldn't be president. What about his economy? What about his foreign policy? What about the deregulation? What about oil? What about gas? What about security? What about energy independence? So this is what your choice is. It's not center left, maybe what a Governor Shapiro would do. This is center way left, but the person who's way left is denying it. One of those people is Tim Walz. You talk about how clueless and anti-business they are. Listen to this guy. Cut 23.
You know, you can tell a lot about people in their personal lives. He spent a decade stiffing service workers in his from dishwashers, waiters, and carpenters on his own properties to enrich himself. As president, he cut overtime benefits for millions of workers, and he opposed any effort to raise the minimum wage. A guy who goes to Mar-a-Lago, and this is a direct quote, he sits there and tells his friends, you're rich as hell and we're going to cut your taxes. I believe him when he says that. But he also turns around and tells workers their wages are too high.
So here's a couple of things. He wants the free market to decide the wages. He wants there to be a minimum wage, but something that's not going to destroy businesses because he understands big and small businesses. All his friends are in business. Tim Walz has never done anything in business that I can tell. Never got a business degree, never worked in a business. But for fantastic that for 24 years, that I love that for 24 years he served in the National Guard. Don't embellish your service. We'll talk about that. But also, I love that you worked in a farm. You have a clue. But you should actually go to some of his properties that he used to own and does own. I did over in Atlantic City. And there are people that come up to me that, you know, almost are at Trump's age and still working and say, I love that guy. He knew my name. He knew my kids. My kids wanted communion. He congratulated them, always remembered them, asked about him when I see him. Most of the people that work for Trump love the guy. And he appreciates them. And that's why when you walk down the street with him, the people that say hello to him are not billionaires in Mercedes. They're the people who might work in the makeup shop or work at CVS because he likes them, and which is why he'll be successful. You could choose not to believe that. I'm giving you a personal observation. I've done it with him. I've been covering him, doing different things, dating back to the Mike Tyson fights when I was working at Sports Phone, so which predated All Sports Radio, and that's where I started here in sports. And he was always unbelievable to people that can't help him. If you judge people, if you know they always say that axiom, you could judge a person's character by how they treat people they need nothing from. He grades really high. So I just love these people that are in business. So they're criticizing two billionaires who were talking on Spaces on Twitter. And I go, what you don't get, yes, Trump got money. But then he said, I'm leaving the boroughs. I'm going to Manhattan. I'm going to make big risks. I'm going to make big money. I'm going to have some losses, but I'm going to be in the game, in the arena. When you go to build a building and how many people you employ, how many unions you have to deal with, there are people who are going to be unhappy, unhappy with performance. You're going to wheel and deal. I got it. But he's making a difference for Elon Musk. Do I have to sell you on Elon Musk? Are you really putting down the Edison, the Henry Ford of our time? The guy that goes into space and also has a tunnel program looking to implant things in people's brains, not only to make them smarter, but to help the paralyzed walk? I mean, my goodness, he's not perfect, but this guy makes a difference. And he came out and said, I will help you with the governor efficiency program. But what they want to talk about is the fact that he says when his workers go on strike, he fires them. Yeah, sometimes you have to. because the business model doesn't work. If everything's unionized, there's some issues there. 5% of the country are in a union. For those 5%, they don't hate Trump. A lot of them are voting for Trump. Adrienne Elrod worked for Clinton, worked for Obama. She's been here for a while. She used to do Outnumbered, I remember. She was actually getting to the point where she's getting tough questions about where are Kamala Harris's interviews? Where does she stand on anything? So I want you to hear some of the sparring that went on CNN yesterday. Cut 24.
She has said on the campaign trail that she would be doing an interview at some point. She said that, I think, last week during a rope line or when she was talking to reporters. But look, what is important here, John, is that she is taking her message directly to the American people. She hit a number of battleground states. I think we had 15,000 people in Detroit last week, 12 to 13,000 in Nevada. She's been taking her message to the voters and drawing large crowds. So she's actually having those direct conversations.
It didn't stop there. Listen, cut 25.
But not today. All I'm saying is not today. She could do an interview today, I would think, you know, because she's not out there today.
Well, look, she's taking her message directly to voters. And just because she doesn't have an interview schedule on her public schedule doesn't mean that she's not taking her message directly to voters about how she's going to improve their lives, how she's going to protect their economic freedoms.
Even they're getting impatient. And just please don't buy into the fact that they say the journalists just want their interview, I don't know, to get our ratings up or become more famous. What it is, and I'm not going to get the interview, I'm sure of it. What it is I just want to be able to do my job. And I think if you're going to run for president, someone's got to ask you what you stand for. If you just announce your policies and you also announce the reason you flip, I'll take that. But for the most part, you're not going to be asked them why you flipped when it comes to single payer health care. You want to get rid of all those plans, decriminalize border crossings. I think that's probably a day away from you saying you don't want to do that anymore. You want to crack down on the border. You haven't done it for 3.5 years. Now you want to say it's okay to frack and it's okay to drill. Why should I believe you, especially when you don't even tell me why? And when you do tell me why, I still say to you, why should I believe you? And then I want to hear, I've been suppressed and repressed by Joe Biden. I had so many great ideas. I wanted to expand oil drilling and fracking, even though I co-signed the new Green Deal bill with Bernie Sanders. But he didn't let me. So that makes Joe Biden look bad. And by the way, Biden's got some people, too. So I look forward, as Chris LaCivita indicated, there's some problems on that side. The Obama people came in. The Biden people are hanging around. There are Harris people there. There's a lot of egos in 80 days. So they're going to need a strategy. And they might not realize it yet, or they do realize it. They have a candidate that cannot think on her feet, can read a prompter, understands how to work a stage, but cannot think on her feet. And what they got to do is get her the job without setting her up in an unscripted situation. And I think that's blatantly unfair to the American people, the American voter. What do you think? 1-866-408-7669. Back in a moment.
Hear the ins and outs of the 2024 election right here. The Brian Kilmeade Show. Breaking news, unique opinions. Hear it all on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Yeah, they can't be who they truly are because their campaign would collapse. Tim Walz was a conservative congressman when he represented Roy Dennis. When he ran for governor and served as governor, he ran as far to the left as he possibly could. Think about his policies on the open border. He enticed illegals to come to America because he gave them free health care, driver's licenses, and college educations. You might as well put a neon sign over the state of Minnesota saying, come here illegally. We want you. And that's what he did as governor. Kamala Harris had the same record when she ran for president. And we have yet to hear her repudiate any of her positions.
That is so true. And Ari Fleischer, if I was Trump team, I would sign him up. I'm so curious. It's so interesting. We're going to have Ian O'Connor in on Friday. When things were bad with Favre and Aaron Rodgers, they called up Ari Fleischer to help with the crisis management situation because it looks like, you know, I don't know if you guys remember, but Brett Favre wouldn't retire. Kept coming back to the point is they had to take away his pass. Aaron Rodgers was ready to start for like 3 years before he actually got the job. But I digress. The guy is brilliant. He's great under pressure, too. And I just think that is the good fight against Tim Walz. He's not at the top of the ticket. But just let them know, this is what she stands. This is where she's from, California, ruined the state. Initially, Nicholas Kristof in the New York Times today said, let's admit it, in a column, and you can actually hear it on audio, it takes 7 minutes, has a column saying, let's just admit it, the liberal states, and he's a liberal Democrat, have not worked, and these states have failed. They try to make people's lives better, but you got a ton of homeless, ton of illegal immigrants, ton of high taxes, and people are leaving. Admit it didn't work. Mark, who's on WPG in Atlantic City. Hey, Mark.
Hey, Brian. First-time caller. I want to start off by saying I'm impressed by the fact that you don't screen your calls as to content, which is very admirable in today's radio.
So what's on your mind, Mark?
Said, I wanted to tell you that I worked for President Trump at the Trump Castle in Atlantic City.
Yep.
I was not a high-end management person. I was a low-end employee, probably made $8 an hour selling change on the floor. And Donald Trump and his wife would come onto the casino floor and talk to us like we were everyday people. They ran an impeccable operation. It was
they treat
the
people great, right?
Was clean. They treated me with respect. They treated me with dignity. Fantastic to work for.
Go get it, Mark. I love those real life things. Maybe we should tell Governor Walz that. Lyman is in North Carolina. Hey, Lyman.
Hey, Brian. How are you?
Good. What's on your mind?
Hey, man. Yeah, so I was just listening to the clip you played a few minutes ago from the Harris spokesman talking about her going out and speaking or whatever. But she's not saying anything about policy.
Nothing.
She hasn't put forth one thing about policy, and her spokespeople keep saying she's talking about policy. So which is it? Is she talking about policy, or is she just fluffing?
No, she's not. She's running rallies talking about how bad Donald Trump is. And what she's doing is Friday, she has an economic speech. That's where it begins. Right now, she's running as a generic Democrat. And when she starts talking about policy, she's got to reverse herself because her beliefs are so blatantly unpopular. And Bidenomics, 60% of people in this recent survey done by the Harris poll say that they want Kamala Harris to abandon Bidenomics. So maybe she's going to say, all my beliefs were wrong, or I was never on board with that. President Biden wasn't really nice to me. He wouldn't put me in anything. You got to have one or the other. Thanks so much for the call. Martha, we're going to break, but I just wanted your thoughts about, isn't it frustrating not knowing any policy, not being able to roll back clips, and you roll back clips about where she stands on something, and it turns out her staff says she's changed her mind?
Well, I think until she comes out personally and makes it clear, the question is why? How'd you get from here to there in this period of time? And if you feel that way, why didn't you speak out about it when you were at President Biden's right hand?
Right. And was he just not factoring you in? Was he icing you out? Because that's a different narrative than Biden's been saying, because she says she was there every step of the way and was the last one to leave. Pretty sure you can't have it both ways. But when we come back, Martha McCallum's reflections on 3 years ago today on our exit from Afghanistan. The biggest disaster in American military history, in my view. What do you think? Brian Kilmeade Show. Exciting time to be on the air. So glad you're listening.
Fastest 3 hours in radio. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
Hey, we are back, and Martha McCallum is back too, anchor of The Story, coming up at 3 p.m. today. Martha also is pumped up because she's going out to Chicago, and she loves the White Sox and thinks they're having a great year. they've only lost.
That's not why I'm going to Chicago.
Oh, there isn't? For the record, not having a great year. Maybe the worst team in baseball, maybe the worst ever, and I think the 1962 Mets are the worst team in baseball history. Chicago White Sox might beat that record, and they're all the remaining Mets who are still alive are hoping. But we'll talk more about that later.
Okay.
Your thoughts about 3 years from today, Afghanistan?
The first thing that jumps into my mind when you look at 3 years of Taliban rule in Afghanistan is that this was what, you know, all of our years and time and toil and loss of life was to protect from happening. Now you have an Afghanistan once again where women have basically zero rights, zero ability to go to school, zero ability to do anything to better their own lives. And I'm also reminded of an evening in Milwaukee when I spent time at a big long table at the hotel we were staying at with the family members of the 13 U.S. service members who were killed, not all of them, several of the families who were there to get on stage that next night, and the pain that is so real and so every day in their lives. Riley McCollum's dad and I talked for a while. He was from Jackson, Wyoming, and, you know, I guess because we share sort of a similar last name and somewhere our families were probably linked back there in Scotland, I've always had a soft spot in my heart for the loss of Riley and his baby who was born right after he was killed. So, you know, this is a disaster, what happened there, and I think it's probably not as forefront in the forefront of people's minds because they have so much going on in this country with inflation and Israel and Ukraine. But I'm glad that you're paying a lot of attention to this third anniversary because I think it's very important.
Ambassador Kurt Volker used to be ambassador to NATO and mm-hmm. Ukraine policy with Trump. He said that there's no doubt about it. The Israeli, the stress on the Israel and what's going on in Ukraine would not have happened if there was no weakness shown
Absolutely.
By the way we left Afghanistan. And guess who came in to celebrate 3 years? Delegations from Iran and China to salute the Taliban 3 years from now. And I just got these numbers. $3 billion we have sent since we left. 600,000 weapons are there. A lot of them have been sold and used to repress others, and 75,000 vehicles. This is unbelievable what we did and how people have forgotten it.
I know. But you're so right to make that connection between the weakness that it signaled and the moves that have been made by Iran. There's no indication that Iran feels anything but completely emboldened. And, you know, I realize that this is I take them at their word when they say they want to wipe Israel off the map. I also think that all the actions that they've taken indicate that they see this as a window of aggression to potentially not maybe fall short of accomplishing that at this point, but to make some serious progress in that regard. And I think anybody who thinks they're not serious about that need only look at, you know, some YouTube videos of them chanting death to America, death to Israel. You know, these are very real goals and they are plotted away at every single day, similar to the way that Al-Qaeda worked on their plot for 9/11. You know, we all go about our lives, but these people are working hard to take this country down and Israel down as well.
I'm looking at the University of Michigan, thinking of Columbia University, thinking of Harvard and Yale, and knowing that Iran played a role in financing that unrest and these protests for the Palestinian cause, which we've shown no interest into this point. Hamas flags, Union Square defiled, the Columbus statue right in front. Union Station, that's what I should be saying. And the burning of the American flag taken down off that pole. We never would have tolerated. After 9/11, that would have been a national scandal. All those people would have been locked up. Mm-hmm. Now we're afraid we didn't have enough we didn't have enough cops there to stop the rally. And they're worried about being overpowered.
Yeah, I mean, that's what happens when the nation's collective memory kind of goes to sleep. And 9/11 is over 20 years ago now. And I think that people have forgotten that there is an intensity to Islamic radicalism, which is, you know, I mean, you can, if you dig into this, and I know you do, Brian, you can see a lot of resurgence in a lot of different places. They have not gone away in Syria or in Iraq or in Afghanistan, these forces that want to take the country down. And it is fascinating and scary that they're resonating through this Iranian infiltration of social media and all of this, which we're now very concerned about with in terms of our political, our electoral season as well. Bigger threat than Russia in terms of what they can do with bots and manipulation. So I look at this Google story and the headlines that are moving around magically to make it look like there are legitimate articles being written about Kamala Harris that show, which are basically just disguised as campaign ads. So, I mean, we have to wake up. I mean, we have to understand and we have to be informed as Americans to understand all the forces that are working to take us down.
I mean, we go in our lives, a lot of times people walk up to us and they'll say, did you hear about what happened, X, Y, and Z? And I never heard that. Where'd you hear it? I saw it on Facebook. Well, who wrote it on Facebook? I saw it a posting, and I follow this guy. He really knows it. Well, that's not it. And then this is what's so evil about what I think is evil about what you were just referred to on the Harris campaign. They're taking articles. You say it's sponsored underneath, and taking pieces of what's in that article, making it the headline, and deceptively putting that headline of what that article is about. And it says sponsored on top. But this is part of the deception and the insincerity. this campaign. We have to change the headlines, make people think they're reading a news story about how great Harris is when the story from Reuters and reputable publications is just the opposite in some cases.
Yeah, they're using a headline, and then the subheadline is basically a line from a Harris campaign, you know, literature, right? Harris will make sure that abortion rights are reinstated, you know, Trump, right. Whatever, since Trump banned them, which isn't what happened, as we know, is a Supreme Court decision. So, you know, all of these things, I feel it's sad, really, because it's so hard to be someone who wants to stay abreast of all of these things in the country today and still, you know, take care of your family and run everything. But I have that same experience all the time. People are like, oh, well, did you see that story? Like, what story? Oh, you know, whatever. Insert headline. I read it on Facebook, or I saw it on TikTok, or, you know, this woman who was, you know, dancing on TikTok knows what she's talking about, and here's what she says is going to happen. And it's and it happens on both sides of the political spectrum. So we need to get our radar up. You know, we all grew up in an era where it was like, well, what's the source? What was the source on that? Who wrote that? What's the context of it? Where is it coming from? Is it believable, not believable? And we need to retrain people, and especially our children, to be critical readers and thinkers as they look at what is being spit out at them. Because, you know, some of it's coming from Iran, who wants to manipulate our election.
When we last talked, the RNC had Donald Trump on a high. Within a couple of days, Joe Biden's out, and Harris has been on a roll, despite not giving
Absolutely.
Interviews, just doing appearances, saying the same speech over and over again, because she's running as a generic Democrat. She's not running as on a record. She's not running on Bidenomics. She's running on neither. At some point, she's got to pick a lane. But I asked Chris LaCivita about the new battleground polling that shows that she's ahead or tied. Listen, Amy Walter of the Cook Report says Harris is now leading or tied with Trump in 6 of the 7 swing states. Do your polling say the same thing?
No. And as a matter of fact, you know, the swing state polling, we still have an advantage in the Electoral College. The map still does not favor. We still have over 20 different paths to get to 270. She's got 2 or 3. And so and understand that in large part, they're trying to redefine Kamala Harris as this new person who just showed up on the scene.
And his goal with his ads that he's running out is to define what she said in the past. Question is, Martha, if she's going to walk away from what she said in the past, she doesn't acknowledge, for example, that Donald Trump came up with the idea about not taxing tips. Not only does she acknowledge it, that she's taken it, Joe Biden is now agreeing with it. And he said, I'd sign legislation for it, where on July 22nd, they were talking about how to declare tips for the IRS.
That's exactly right. They wanted more tips declared on your taxes. So, I mean, it is crazy to watch the whipsaw changes that we're seeing across the board on this whole thing. And I think it's very interesting to listen to Chris LaCivita on that. He's obviously, he and Susie Wiles running the Trump campaign, and you've had a chance to talk to him a couple of times, which has been great. He doesn't do a lot of interviews, so it's been great to hear from him on that. You know, it is, I mean, I don't ever remember a more dramatic sequence of events, because at the RNC, you had everybody from, you know, people on our sets to Van Jones at CNN talking about there's something happening here. I mean, this is a very strong movement, very patriotic feeling coming out of it. People were talking about a potential landslide for former President Trump. They were talking about him, you know, gaining ground in states like Virginia and Minnesota and places that are more difficult, New Hampshire. So he has a tall task. One of the numbers I saw this morning in the Monmouth polls was extraordinary to me, and it is this. They, you know, this is in terms of intensity and enthusiasm, which is a really important marker to look at for both parties. The biggest jump among Democrats, it went from 46% in June enthusiasm levels to 85% now. That's an enormous jump. I mean, Huge. We don't ever see moves like that. And the Trump
side. That's
before
the convention.
Yes. So, right. It was probably. And, you know, it's not clear here whether that June number is after or before the debate. But I mean, that is depressed enthusiasm levels that most people could not get up off the mat on for any party, 46%. Now they're at 85. But I think that in many ways, you know, the President Biden did Kamala Harris a huge favor by waiting as long as he did and depressing the electorate to such a level that once
he didn't know
he
was doing it.
No, he didn't. But once he said, "I'm out," after tremendous pressure and manipulation from his party, It was like when, you know, somebody gets off the bottom of a seesaw and lets you fly on the other side. I mean, because people were all, you know, Democratic supporters. And you know what Nikki Haley's talking about? Those independents, suburban mothers, all of these people, you know, and I've heard people say, "Oh, well, you know what? I'm kind of interested in her now. I didn't really see her this way before." So she is succeeding in getting a lot of positive attention. People are giving her a look, okay, who might not have. And now she has to stand up and tell everybody what she believes in. But you can't deny that she's getting a look from voters who were not interested in voting for Joe Biden.
So Nikki Haley came out and said, stop talking about what gender. Stop talking about your heritage, black or Indian. Just talk about the issues. Don't talk about crowd size. Here's what Chris LaCivita said about that criticism.
Well, look, here's the thing. If you look at what the national media decides it's going to talk about, right, and decide what they want to emphasize, that's, you know, they'll pull that stuff out from 5 years ago, 4 years ago, 3 years ago. It's a losing battle. You know, when the president did his press conference at Mar-a-Lago a little over a week ago and literally stood in front of the press, the entire press, for an hour, and took every conceivable question. None of those answers on the vast majority of those questions have ever been talked about. I mean, he talked about inflation. He talked about where we are in the world stage. Look, the focus of the campaign has always been about putting Americans in a better position to be successful. And it's going to continue to be that way.
Your thoughts about his explanation?
I would say this. If that's what it's about, then it has to be about that 100% of the time, right? Not about grievances, not about – and, you know, I understand what Chris LaCivita is saying because I watched the entire press conference. I listened to the entire Musk interview. There's a lot of very interesting, strong things for their campaign in both of those venues. But you can't – you have to stay disciplined. And one of the things that was discussed so much in the early part of this campaign was how much more disciplined – President Trump was. And I really think when I go back to the town hall that Brett and I did with him in Iowa, that was the response to it. Everyone said, oh, you know, he's so disciplined, so much more. You know, what he said about abortion and just decisions around all of that was so interesting. And people said they hadn't really heard him speak about it like that. If he wants to win, he has to get back to that place where it's not about him. Where, remember, you know, all of those lines about, you know, it's not about retribution. It's about success. That will be my, success will be my retribution. The success of the American people, of you and you and you. And that's where he needs to get back to. Clearly, he was rocked by this whole, you know, change of events. And I think Nikki Haley was right in that, you know, you were always going to be running against Kamala Harris one way or the other. And that ultimately it would likely be her in that seat. Yeah. So I think that the campaign should have sort of had that in mind all along. I think when you look at it in retrospect, hindsight's always easy. But that night of June 27th, watching that debate, it was pretty clear to all of us watching it that, like, something was going to give. There's no way this can go on.
You know what? I think about this, Martha. I think they anticipated everything, but they also knew her approval rating was below his. So they said if she comes
absolutely,
out.
Absolutely, Ryan.
If she comes out, people
know. They
weren't
worried. No, weren't absolutely. Worried about it. But I think they didn't take into account the relief factor. Speaking of relief, the relief factor of, like, oh my gosh, it's someone new and she's under, you know, the age of 78.
I still can't get my head around it. But Martha McCallum's going to tell us exclusively what's on her show in just a moment. Mm-hmm. Don't move. Brian Kilmeade.
Expanding your knowledge base. It's the Brian Kilmeade Show. The talk show that's getting you talking. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
So Martha, Martha McCallum's back. Normally very professional. She doesn't usually talk right through the break. What's going on? Martha, your show starts at 3 o'clock today, Eastern time.
Indeed it does.
Who are you thinking about booking?
So, Brian Kilmeade, what do you think?
I'm going to close the show.
Yes, you're going to close the show, and we're looking forward to having you on this afternoon. We also have Rosanna Scotto on to talk about this incredible crime surge that's happening in New York.
It's a great
idea. People say, oh, the crime is down. But when you look at what's happening in these outside of these homeless shelters, this woman who was raped, you look at the, you trace back the people who have been arrested or who they're looking for in these horrific cases. And most of them have done something prior. Why they weren't kicked out of the country? To me, if you're in this country illegally and you commit a crime, honestly, I don't care if it's, stealing, some cold cuts and a loaf of bread. It's like, that's your covenant that you make, right? You cross into the country illegally. If you break the law, you have to leave. But that has not been the policy under this administration. And all of these people have suffered for it gravely. And it's very sad. So we're going to talk to her about that this afternoon. And we've got a great lineup coming up. We're going to talk a lot about immigration and what's going on and all of the developments as we wait now 82 days from the presidential election.
So Governor Walz is for a sanctuary state, or he's trying to make it sanctuary state. Mm-hmm. He says come one, come all. He actually bid on these Somalis, illegal immigrant Somalis, to get him there. The front page of The New York Post today, and this could be your state. Certainly California's bigger. New York State migrant crisis will cost $5
billion. $5
billion. $2 billion on housing, $2 billion on services and supplies, $500 million on food and medical costs, $500 million on administrative and other costs. And keep in mind, they don't even like our food. So now we're giving them debit cards to walk around. That one of these people on Monday, one of the people that was arrested for shoplifting at a Sephora, the makeup shop, desperately needed makeup, obviously. He was the one who led the battalion to beat up those two cops in January 27th.
No,
let him out on a bond. A Lutheran church bailed him out.
I know.
Paid his bond. I mean, that's crazy. What drives me crazy.
No, that's crazy.
Heart's in the right place, but your head isn't.
Yeah.
All right, we'll see you at
Thanks,
3,
Brian.
Martha.
See you at 3.
Brian Kilmeade.
From the Fox News Podcasts Network. Subscribe and listen to the Trey Gowdy Podcast. Former federal prosecutor and four-term U.S. congressman from South Carolina brings you a one-of-a-kind podcast. Subscribe and listen now by going to foxnewspodcasts.com. Listen to the show ad-free on Fox News Podcast Plus, on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music with your Prime membership, or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.